Let's do this!
A swing and a belt. Left field. Way back. Blue Jays win it.
Oh, God. Down the sideline. Wow. Touchdown.
Unbelievable.
Trying to finish it.
It's over. It's over.
Here's a chance. That goal. Shot rebound. Score. How's it going, everybody? Welcome to Tall Can Sports number 391 on the Tall Can Audio Podcast Network. Rob over there.
Hey.
And as promised earlier on, for those of you following us on Instagram at Tall Can Audio and who caught last night's show, we mentioned we were having a guest, and he's here today, Chris Stevenson of The Athletic. How's it going?
Hello. Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Really appreciate you making a little time for us. This is the day after the Super Bowl. That's what everybody's talking about, as well as the halftime show. A couple of women looking pretty good up there, despite their advanced age, I guess, was what was being called on Twitter.
Easy there, my
that
friend.
That didn't even, like, cross my mind.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, interesting game, and they end up giving Mahomes the MVP, probably based mostly on that fourth quarter. I'd be curious to get takeaways from both of you guys on what you thought of the game. A couple of them lately haven't been all that good.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I think early on, looked like it ran that risk, but I thought picked up, obviously, towards the end. What do you guys think?
I thought the game was, through three quarters, went incredibly quick. Like, to me, it was...
I agree with you. Like, there was a couple of times I looked up and I'm like, there's only 4 minutes left in, like, the first quarter at this point.
True,
like, it did seem to go by really quickly.
It hummed along, and then the fourth quarter sort of, because, you know, they want to fire their commercials in. Mahomes, I think that came down to, A, the fourth quarter, but it also came down to there maybe being no other worthy standout options, right?
Yeah.
You had Kelsey, or you had, you know, really, I'm not sure what else you had. Williams. Right?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
But there wasn't, I think they want that story to begin with,
sure.
Right?
You're building a young superstar here too, right? And, for the league's sake.
And if you looked at how that game was going for him, passes in behind, passes short, right? Just how even Aikman said on a couple of occasions, he's not playing well.
Right.
And he looked nervous.
Yeah.
For sure. He looked like he was having trouble handling the size of that stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was listening to 1200 today, and I thought Steve Bunder brought it up and said it wasn't his thought, that it actually came from Andre Tourney, the 67's coach, because they were or Kenny Walls said they were watching the game on the weekend with the center. I guess the 67's were on the road, and Andre Tourney, when San Francisco had the interception, and remember they all ran down into the end zone and lined up for the picture.
Yes.
Weird.
Like, I just wonder if that was a tipping point.
Yeah.
Again, not my. I thought about it at the time. I'm like, whoa, that's like a little bit much for where we are in this game at this point. That's a little bit over the top when almost the whole defense went down in the end zone and mugged like they were lining up for a picture.
I think that was a second interception.
I would love to know, and you might not get a straight answer, but maybe you would. But you'd like to know from some of the Chiefs, like, how much that rubbed them the wrong way. We just saw, like, the Battle of Alberta with the Riddich flip of the stick
flip,
after
Joey Bats flip,
And they weren't, clearly the Oilers weren't happy happy about that. So I wonder how much that was a turning point. And there was also, too, Just thinking, as I said, you know, Mahomes thinking that this is maybe a little bit too big of a stage, and that finally he just kind of got adjusted to it.
Yeah.
And there were some adjustments made by the coaching staff.
Well, I like that Andy Reid stuck with him, right? Like, he threw a couple of picks. He said, you're our guy. Get out there and keep slinging it, man. Like, this is what's going to have to happen. 3rd and 15 at one point, you don't get that done, the game's probably over, right?
Well, and that 3rd and 15 came off the... right on the heels of the scoop.
Yep.
Right? Which was called a complete pass and then challenged. And you sort of go, oof, we've been waiting for something, just a little something, yep. right? And yeah, for him to turn around and hit him for that 44 yards or whatever that was
yeah.
on the very next play was kind of like seals broken.
Yeah,
right.
Here we go.
It just the whole mood changed yep. of the game.
Yeah.
Is this a memorable Super Bowl for you guys, or is this kind of a Yeah, I mean, I know we had the president of the United States congratulating the wrong state.
Kansas, that's awesome.
I really, who hasn't made that mistake?
I suppose.
Not the president. I maybe George Bush. I can't really say.
Was there a moment in this one that makes you think, yeah, in 10 years I'll remember this Super Bowl, or is this just kind of one of those ones?
I think this one becomes memorable because of the fact that we had two teams that weren't in it. Like all those Patriots Super Bowls,
yeah.
I'm not a huge NFL guy. All those Patriots Super Bowls kind of blend into one for sure.
I watch one Patriots game every year, and it's
like
Super
I think
Bowl.
About, you know, why did the other one stand out? Because of the last minute finishes,
yep.
right? The one against Seattle with the play at the goal line.
That's true.
The big comeback against Atlanta.
Yep.
The David Tyree catch on the helmet.
Yeah, going the other right. way, yeah.
But yep. I think this one kind of like carves its own little niche out because it was two relatively, I'm using air quotes, new teams that
yep.
were in it, even though Kansas City played in like whatever it was, Super Bowl III.
Yeah.
yes.
But and the 49ers having five or six Super Bowls yeah. already, whatever. But the idea, and
they
I
haven't
think,
been so bad like for the last decade.
Just. Right. But I think to echo Chris's sentiments, it's, I'm not a huge NFL guy either. We don't talk a pile of NFL. We sort of hit on the big stories here. But neither one of these teams sort of had that built-in distaste, right? It's not mm-hmm. the Cowboys.
Right.
It's not the Patriots where you have this huge,
yeah.
I'm rooting against rather yeah. than rooting for somebody.
Yeah, those the national brands where you've got as many people rooting against, yeah. like the Tiger
Woods.
I'm
watching it to see the Patriots lose, right?
Football, yeah. There's as many tuning in to see them lose as are to yeah. see them
right.
win.
And I wanted to see, I was hoping for the Chiefs win. You know, Mahomes is a great story.
Andy
Reid's a great story. The 50 years since,
yep.
you know,
yep.
mm-hmm. those sorts of things are good, not for the Leafs, but they're good for other people to break those sort of those ruts. But at the end of the day, I'm watching it and I'm cheering for the Chiefs, but it's nice to not have that at the end where I'm like, well, if the 49ers win, I don't really care.
Roll over.
Whereas, yeah, exactly. In the past, I've been yeah. like, oh, for I can't see that happening.
I think for me, it'll depend on what happens next. I think we could see these teams play again in the Super Bowl a couple more times, or if Patrick Mahomes goes on to become the new guy,
yep.
right, then yep. maybe this becomes a more memorable Super Bowl because it's the starting point of this rivalry or of his, you know, even though he's been on his game now for a little while, I think maybe that's when this one becomes a little more. Otherwise, as a game itself, for me, I don't know that I remember
this. But see, what Mahomes doesn't have right now is, and what's, you know, Tom Brady's worn out his welcome. He's kind of a good-looking dude, got a former supermodel wife, and
yeah.
you're like, and he wins Super Bowls too.
Yeah.
You, my friend,
have
grown. I've grown tired of yeah. all of this.
Yeah,
Mahomes got crazy bad hair. He's got a Muppet voice, and so right away you're like, okay, I get that.
He's
right?
one of us.
Yeah, yeah. He's exactly right. He could be whatever, right? So
except
he's got,
talented.
Yeah. He, the talent thing, what whatever.
Yeah.
yeah, but. So he's already got a little more credit with the average guy, I
yeah.
think, before that happens.
No, it's true. As we sort of move off of that, you know, we obviously want to talk a little bit of Senators hockey here since we've got you.
Mm-hmm.
I know Rob wanted to tee up a little.
Well, no, but as we're going to carry along, I think one of the things that's very interesting and timely for this area is for the Athletic, you've been doing a lot of the View from Belleville.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think as a Senators fan and any of those listening, super interested in what's happening. It's sort of a unique time when everyone's still got an eye on the NHL team and you're like, yeah, what's happening here? But you really,
yeah,
the other one is looking, going, saying, all right, what's happening with the future? What's going on with some of these prospects
yeah.
down there, right? And so I think it's a unique time for that. It's kind of giving you a separate avenue. Am I right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, let's face it, there's been a lot of years where the farm teams just hasn't been good. And they're justifiably, there wasn't much of a reason to cover them. Right. I think in the last couple of years, because of them deciding to go on the rebuild path, that they've acquired so many good prospects that now this is an interesting team, because you can see the nucleus of that Belleville team at some point playing a key role in what's going to happen here at the NHL level. So, you know, we've already seen it with guys like, you know, Batherson being able to come up and have an impact. And I think he'll go back to Belleville, but only because I think that they've got a team that's on the cusp of maybe doing something special this year, to tell you the truth.
Right.
Christian Willanen. The big weakness on Belleville, just to frame things here, I mean, they're almost a 4-goal-a-game team. And coaches will tell you in professional hockey now, AHL, NHL level, you get to 3 and you've got a good chance of winning now.
Yeah, Rob.
You get to 4. You get to 4 and you're going to
I'm a Leaf guy, man. That's what we're praying hard for.
And I've been panning the Dubas thing for forever here.
You might want to fix that being 29th in the NHL in goals against.
No, we're good. We just got to be first in goals for.
If you're getting 4, but you're giving up 5,
well, not
you're
going to
run Freddie out until the pads fall so right off him.
Yeah. Jeez, wouldn't that have been a good landing spot for Craig Anderson?
Yeah, I agree.
Matt was talking about that in the show on Sunday. He's like, wouldn't be bad if you left him behind on Saturday.
Going to eat all but $75 of his cap.
Yeah, no kidding. But getting back to Belleville, you know, I think Batherson might go back just because I think he can. I think he can be a good contributor down there.
Get some ice time, be an impact guy, and push towards something special.
So it's interesting now. Logan Brown, Josh Norris, for me, has been a revelation.
He's the name I keep hearing about down there.
Yeah. Just a great two-way player. He's a kid that they got in the Carlson deal,
right?
Former first-round draft pick, and he's just been lights out. Like his first year in the pros, he set. I was in Laval Saturday night when Belleville played the Rocket, and they were down 4-1 with about 10 minutes to go. Ended up winning 5-4 in overtime.
Who was in that?
Gustafson was in net for that one. Okay. Didn't have the greatest game, but he did make like a couple of big saves when the game really could have gotten out of hand.
The Grant Fear saves.
He made a couple of good saves that kind of kept them around. Okay. And then it was 4-1. They were looking kind of dead in the water. And Logan Brown got the puck in the neutral zone, got a step on the D-man on the outside, and then just scored on a rocket to the top corner on Keith Kincaid. And then all of a sudden it kind of lit up the bench. And the next thing you know, they're off and running. And it's that kind of team.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, you know, with the skill that they have up front, that they're never out of a game. And if they can get a little bit more depth on the blue line, that's why I say Christian Willanen's going to be coming back from his shoulder surgery. He skated again today with the NHL team. But I think the plan is by the end of the week to have him go down to Belleville, probably practice there for the better part of a week. And then I think they might be looking at maybe around Valentine's Day for him to actually play to play a game. And then I guess they'll wait and see if he'll actually get any NHL games. But he is exactly what they need down there. He's one of the best defensemen in the American Hockey League. If they can get him into that lineup and bolster the blue line, because most of this year they've had a blue line that's been mostly guys on American Hockey League or two-way deals with the AHL and the ECHL contract. So to get another NHL caliber solid NHL caliber prospect down there is going to be a huge boost for them.
And have you obviously had a chance to speak to Christian?
Yeah.
He just seems to be, he just seems to have his shit together, that guy. Like he just seems like he gets it.
Yeah. Communications major at North Dakota.
North Dakota.
And yes, he does have the gift of gab. And I could see him. He hasn't even started his NHL career, really, and I can already see him being a guy who's going to have
a
good opportunity as a post-career guy in the media business.
Because, he certainly does come across
as a great talker,
a polished speaker. Yeah.
What do you make this year of Brännström? And we've seen him up and we've seen him down. In your opinion, you know, would he be better off, you know, finishing out the year in the A and having some success and helping push them forward, or is he better served in the NHL on a team that is rebuilding but seeing that tough competition? What do you think is the best way for a guy who's clearly, you know, tabbed to be one of their top guys moving forward? How would you want to finish it?
Yeah, I think right now there's no question that he needs to be in Belleville.
Yeah.
Like, I think I watched him when they first made the trade. I went down and saw him play his first couple of games in Belleville, and I thought, wow, this guy is the real deal.
Right.
Like, he took a couple of pucks that were just kind of like routine plays and managed to manufacture scoring chances out of them almost single-handedly.
Wow.
But I think maybe he got into the trap, particularly at the NHL level, of wanting to prove to the coaches that he could be trusted defensively. And I think concentrating on that so much took away what really is the dynamic part of his game, and that's skating and handling the puck. And then I think when he first got down to Belleville after they sent him down, I think he was maybe a little bit too guilty of trying to prove that he still had the offensive part to his game, and he was trying to do too many things on his own.
Yeah.
Where really, with his speed and his smarts, like, his game's got to be kind of like, you know, working the triangles, the give and go, and get open. He's got a great shot. Honestly, one of the most dynamic skaters that I've seen. Like, he can change direction and mobility is off the charts.
Right.
So I think there's a tremendous amount of potential there. I still think, you know, as a young guy who's still only 20 years old, they're still trying to, you know, I think he's still trying to kind of forge that identity of exactly what he's going to be. And I think until he can make some positive steps in that direction, Belleville's the best place for him to do that.
That's the danger, right? You come up and you feel like you got to do something that isn't you, and then you go back down and you're trying to recover what was you. And
coaches are still like, DJ Smith, this is his first coaching job.
Yep.
Like, he doesn't want this to blow up in his face. He still needs to win some games and show that his team's competitive. Yeah. So as we've seen a lot of times, we've seen a lot of the younger guys' minutes go down when he's been more trusting of the veterans, because he's trying to win games too.
Of course, yeah.
What, and who knew this was going to be a view from Belleville segment, but I'm also super interested in, I'm going to give you two names and then let you run with it in whatever direction you want. Formanton and Joey Decord, I'm interested in.
Formanton, don't forget, this is a guy who made the Senators, right, as an 18-year-old. A
couple of different times, exactly.
Like, what was he, the third youngest guy, I think, to make his team coming out of training camp?
Just had turned 18.
Obviously, his biggest asset is his speed. I think he's learned, number one, I can't believe in the 2 years how much bigger he's gotten. I talked to him on Saturday night. Like, he is really starting to fill out. The thing I like about his game, and the same thing I like about Philip Schlappick's game, is they are mean SOBs down
there. Little bite on the forecheck.
Schlappick is a mean player in the AHL, and he gets his space, and Formanton's becoming that guy. He hands out some big hits on the forecheck.
Really?
Not afraid to chop some guys here and there. Like, Formanton's he's started to create some space for himself. If he continues to keep evolving that kind of physical part of his game, coupled with that speed, like, I can see him being like one of the best third line players in the NHL.
Right.
A great penalty killer, you know, because of his smarts and his speed, such a threat on the PK. But that's the thing I've liked about his game, is he's really introduced a nice physical edge to his game down there in the American Hockey League. Same thing with Schlappick. I think we've seen a little bit of that now. As Schlappick gets more comfortable playing in the NHL, I think we've seen him have a little bit of that jam too.
Right.
So, I think Formanton's on a great track, and he's got, whatever it is, 21 goals. So, you know, I think there was a worry for a little while, like, you know, were hands ever going to catch up with his feet? And I think he's shown that he can have some scoring touch. The American Hockey League is not an easy league.
It's not.
No. Well, and especially for a 20-year-old, right?
and getting 20 goals there is a huge huge step forward for him. So I'd say he's right on track, and I think right now, from what I saw from him earlier, I'd say that he's maybe even surpassed what I thought.
Really?
He would be at this point.
Well, because there was always some concern about his finish, right?
Right.
That he was going to.
I think, you know, like I said, having 20 goals in we're in February now, but he had the 20 in January in the American Hockey League, which I said, like I said, it's not an easy league
as a rookie.
So I think that's really encouraging to see him make what to me are really huge leaps and bounds in terms of his improvement.
And so, Joey Decord, any thoughts there? Or?
Well, you know, I think Decord, everybody looks at Gustafson, I think, and they made that trade with
the Broussard trade.
Pittsburgh and you know, everybody, I think, thought that he should have been backing up in the NHL by now. I think we lose sight of the fact that he is a goalie and he's younger, and that's where Decord's got a bit of an advantage, right? He's an older
guy. He's a little older,
Played college. So he's got a little bit of maturity. And same thing with Hogberg. Like, we're seeing Hogberg take a huge step forward this year. He's 25.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so where's Gustafson going to be in 5 years from
now?
Sure,
yeah, it's true.
So I think Decord, good on him. He's come in, been given an opportunity, and he's really run with it. And I think that's the other thing that I think makes a lot of people about Belleville's chances, the optimism that there could be for Belleville's chances in the playoffs is because they've got two young goaltenders who are playing really well right now.
Well,
and I think if you had said, well, Hogberg's going to be up because, you know, Anders Nilsson's going to be missing a couple of months because of a concussion, you would have thought, whoa, you know.
Right.
Belleville with a guy who started the year in the ECHL and a young guy who has really been inconsistent and up and down. But I think the fact that Decord came in and played as well as he has kind of pushed Gustafson to get better. And they're now Gustafson's had a couple of equipment tweaks, I think, which have helped him. He's changed his upper body armor, which I think has helped him. Give him a little bit more confidence.
Right.
But I think the fact now that he looked at it and he's be like, whoa, Hogberg's up there in the NHL and he's the backup now. And Joey Decord's kind of come from nowhere and pushed me down to a backup
Should
job in the American Hockey
little.
League.
Yeah.
I mean, I need to play here to
I was
to
the goalie of the tournament at the World Juniors, right? I have this pedigree.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's pushed him to be better, a little bit of desperation to his game because he saw himself getting pushed down the depth chart.
Well, and it's worth noting, and I did take the slight tisking you were giving me there with the asking about Decord over Gustafson, right, and saying, hey, don't forget, you know, the current shiny thing, right? But yeah, listening to the weekly hit on 1200 with Coach Mann, right, and he's saying that for Gustafson, exactly what you're saying, the best thing may have been the competition, and that he's risen to it, and we've talked about it here on the show that the tournament, the World Junior tournament, that Gustafson was goalie of the tournament, had Carter Hart in it, right, and nobody's questioning, you know, his quality. So, I'll take it.
It's perspective sometimes.
I'm of the mind, and Hogberg's another example, but we've all talked about it. Like for me, 25 is when you can really kind of start looking and evaluating a goaltender.
Yeah, well, and it's
that
funny
point
right
now for forwards. That's like old now, right? If you haven't, not a first line player at 25, and you were a former top pick, it's like woof.
Well, it wasn't until I was looking at your seven thoughts here, which I think the most recent one was Friday, maybe. And that's at The Athletic for those of you I've referenced before. Subscription required, but recommended. That I had no idea that he was 25 years old. Right? Yeah. It's funny the way we kind of lose track. The forwards you see bursting in, no problem at 18 sometimes, right? If they're the big shiny guy. Defensemen, it's a little more rare, but you are seeing it more and more. Goalies, you forget. They just take a while, right?
Exactly.
And guys like Carter Hart, they throw off the curve because we panned the move last year when Philly called him up going, it's too early.
Yeah.
You're blowing through goalies. You can't do it. And he had to kind of, it took him a little bit, but he seems to have gotten it going.
There's no question that guys like the Marc-Andre Fleury's of the world are the outliers when it comes
goalies
to goalies.
Take a while,
For me, like I said, for me, like 25 for me is kind of like the edge of the cliff for goaltenders.
Yeah.
Like I'm willing to give them until they reach that age to really make a determination. And I mean, look at even a guy like Anders Nilsson.
Yeah.
So
no, that's a good point.
He's 29.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he was in Vancouver and got traded here,
right,
I'm looking at his numbers and I'm like, whoa, guy's 29. Look at it. He's he's a journeyman
right
at best. But yet he comes here. I think he was made to feel more valued.
Sure.
Maybe than in some of the other places. Yeah, you know, like we've traded for you. Yeah, yeah, we've traded for you. We're going to give you an opportunity.
Absolutely.
And, you know, on the last place team in the league, he goes 11-11
Yeah.
In the games that, that he started. And, you know, let's give a tip of that to Pierre Grew, the goaltending coach in Ottawa as well, works with him. And all of a sudden, you know, Anders Nilsson is looking like a guy who could be a number one.
Yeah, he's worth keeping around.
Could be a starter for you, and at least he's giving you enough to say, let's answer the question. Let's give him an opportunity to do it and see if he can.
Because goalies are voodoo, man.
But, you know, there's a guy at maybe took another leap forward in his career at the age of 29.
Yeah. No, it's true. So why don't you take this Chris Phillips one as we wind it down?
Yeah. And really, it was just the timeliness of the Phillips jersey retirement, which is coming up, I believe, on February 18th.
Yeah.
And him being, I think, one of the last, maybe Berard was the last first overall, but Phillips being a first overall pick and looking at the potential of Ottawa having one now, how would you view Chris Phillips as a first overall pick in hindsight? Is that a great first overall in this time of MacKinnon, McDavid, Matthews, right? To look back at Chris Phillips and say, is it enough that he played almost 1,200 games for one franchise and he was a stabilizing factor? Just how do you, is that a win, or is that closer to a Patrick Stefan or Yakupov?
I'm going to cheat now for a second and go to my phone here because
I've only got
so much room in my brain. So I'm not one of those guys that like memorizes every single NHL draft.
You want to know who else is in that draft?
Yeah.
JP Dumont came out of that draft. Really, to me, Zdeno Chara was in that first round.
He got here anyway.
Yeah, and we ended up with him. Yeah, I don't think it was a bumper crop. And Phillips was playing for Lethbridge. That was the Memorial Cup that was in Hull, right? And he was a...
So
go to Hull.
I'm just, my thing is the way that I would evaluate it, and you say, well, where does he rank in like the number one picks? I don't think that's a fair comparison.
Yep. And this is what I'm looking for.
For me, was he the best pick in the draft? At that draft, like everybody will tell you 1996 was one of the worst drafts ever.
Right.
Right. Two world juniors.
So all you
right?
can do which is compare fair. Him against his peers.
So did you take like the best player in that draft? So let's just quickly run down. Phillips goes number one. Andre Zuzan, two. J.P. Dumont, Alexander Volchkov, Richard Jackman, Boyd Devereaux, Eric Rasmussen, Jonathan Aikman, Ruslan Saleh, Lance Ward, Dan Fote, Josh Holden, Derek Morris, Marty Riesner, Dana Supers,
Marty Riesner, yes.
Mario Larocque, Yaroslav Svechkovsky,
sure.
Matt Higgins, Matthew Decoteau, Marcus Nilsson, Marco Sturm, Jeff Brown, Craig Marcus Hillier, Sturm, Daniel Jeff Briere, Brown. Peter Ratchuk, Jesse Wallen is your
what
first
a terrible, terrible. Hey,
Derek Morris, long before he ballooned up and had that serious problem. Eric Rasmussen, Buffalo Sabres, am I right with that?
That sounds so you got right. A guy, yes, that's right.
So you picked a guy.
I like Lazy Susan.
That wound up playing 1,179 games.
Yep.
In that draft, that ranks fourth. Behind Chara, Matt Cullen,
Chara, who's still playing.
And Danis Zubris.
Oh, Danis Zubris. Yeah.
So the guys, so let's run down the list of the guys who played the most games. So for sure you would say
Chara.
Chara went in the third round, 56th overall to the Islanders. But going down that list, never mind the first round.
Yeah.
Which for me, you can argue Ottawa got the best player in the first round.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
Right up there with Briere. I would throw that into into that
fair
mix.
Enough. So
prior to Rockland.
In terms of games played in the NHL, which I think is a pretty
you guys
good
are being
indication
horribly
of
unfair to Ruslan Saleh.
It's happening.
Chara, Cullen, Zubris, Phillips, Derek
Morris. That's Matt Cullen?
Yeah.
Yep.
He only wrapped it up a year or two ago. Well,
and he was
Thomas Cabrelle.
A senator for a bit.
Daniel Briere, Pavel Kubinas, Corey Sarich, Mikhail Roosevelt, Craig Adams. I'm not sure if that's Craig A. Adams or whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of Adamses.
Marco Sturm, Ruslan Saleh, Willie Mitchell, blah, blah, blah. Sammy Salo.
Hey.
So for me, when you're looking at that draft,
a bunch of centers
they did pretty well taking And they really did pretty well taking Chris Phillips, because that had the potential of being one of those disastrous first picks.
Like the fact that he played.
If you had taken any of those other guys in that first round, you'd be looking back on this now and say, whoa, that was a. There wouldn't
That's
be a
the Ruslan Saleh draft.
There wouldn't be a sweater retirement going on for the guy they took in 1996 in the first round.
And I didn't want to lead you with the statement. I just was interested in, as a guy who's been around for the entirety of the franchise, that I think people do look at that and go, really? That guy was a first overall?
Yeah.
But we've just unearthed. But
don't you think? You know, we've talked on this show quite a bit. The Hall of Fame is for the great. The jersey retirement? Whoever mattered in your market.
Yeah.
Chris Phillips, popular guy here, played here. I got no beef with a guy like that having his jersey retired
Absolutely
here. He mattered here, right?
He leads the franchise in games played.
Opened a great brewery. He's let control of it get away, but that was good for the market, too.
was part of the greatest era that this modern franchise has had. He was a key guy on that team. I mean, he was drafted in 96. They made the playoffs for the first time in 97. So that whole decade from 97 to 2007, which culminates with their trip to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a huge part of.
Absolutely.
He was either on the top pair or the number three guy.
As we've covered, I'm the least guy.
On all those teams.
I hated Chris Phillips, right? Yeah. Every year
Phillips
in the playoffs.
And Volchenkov for that one that stretch were dynamite together. Yeah.
So
enough of that guy.
As you said, like, what did the guy mean in your market? Is Chris Phillips a Hall of Famer? No, not I think by.
But he's Wendell Clark in Toronto.
But
retire that number, celebrate that guy.
Like he's one of the guys that you can celebrate as being one of the greatest in the modern history of your modern franchise.
So as we wind this down, want to say thank you for giving us so much of your time. But where can we find you? Where can people follow you on social media? Hit us again with the Ottawa Craft Beer Insider, all this stuff. Where can we find Chris Stevenson?
Yeah, Twitter at CJ_ Stevenson, and I'll cover everything there from beer to golf to mostly Senators.
Right.
And just search Ottawa Craft Beer Insider. We've done one episode. I think it's a pretty good one with Lon Liddell from Big Rig, talking about the changes there and what's going to happen in the future. We'll have more episodes coming up in the near future. And you can find most of the writing at hockey anyway at The Athletic. And I pitch in the odd piece on golf, mostly Brooke Henderson stuff with Flagstick. And also do some content for Rideau View Golf Club. And I should have mentioned this earlier. So we did a really neat thing at Rideau View. So a couple of years ago, among a lot of the golf clubs, I think being stewards of environmentalism, since you're managing so much green space, a lot of the clubs wanted to start becoming self-sufficient. So there was a lot of clubs that started their own vegetable gardens to grow all their own vegetables for the kitchen. And beehives have been another big thing. A lot of times the clubs are located in agricultural areas. So having the beehives and encouraging the beehive community, I guess you'd call it, helps with the pollination of the crops. And a nice offshoot of that is that they would have honey.
Selling off
honey
the honey.
To sell it
yeah,
to,
for
honey
sure.
To sell at the club. So anyway, a couple of years ago, Chris Phillips, who's been a member at Rideau View, Steve Duckett, the general manager there, had the idea that, you know what, why don't we try growing our own hops and making our own beer? It was a fun part for me to be a part of this project. We did a bunch of research to find out which hops could be growing here. And Gord McMillan, who's the superintendent out there, did a wonderful job sourcing the hops and building this magnificent trellis system with these about 30-foot high poles set in cement with all these guy wires and everything else that could be cranked up or lowered down for the hops to grow up. And it was located right behind the 17th tee It's a par four at Rideau View.
Okay.
So people in the course of the summer, anybody who's been around hops know that they can grow like a foot in a day.
Right.
Like, and the conditions are right. They grow tremendously fast. So it takes a couple of years before they're actually ready to be harvested to make beer.
Right.
So it became a collaboration between Rideau View and Big Rig. Cody Monroe was the brewer that became part of the project. We had a meeting with all kinds of stakeholders at the table to decide what the flavor profile of the beer should be, how it should look. Obviously, it's a golf club. It's summertime. You want it to look great on the patio. So we leaned towards a Pilsner or a blonde ale type thing. But we still wanted to have it have that little bit of bite of the hops, right? You've grown the hops on the golf course. You want them to come through in the beer.
Star of the show.
Yeah. And anyway, Cody at Big Rig just nailed it. He made exactly what we wanted, which just is incredible to me that we could sit around a table and articulate what we wanted in a beer and that Cody could take all of this. And anybody who's watched the brewing process knows you know, how much of it is scientific and how much of it is art.
Art meets science. Yeah.
And Cody just nailed it. So last spring was the first brewing. We ended up calling it Number 17 because it was grown behind the 17T. And it was a huge hit at the club. It became, they've got about, they have a wonderful pub there called the Fallen Oak.
Okay.
The bar is made with wood from the Fallen Oak tree, which was the signature tree. It's in the logo of the golf club. I'm actually wearing a Rideau View hoodie right now.
Nice. Okay.
Tree got destroyed in a wind shear. So they kept the wood and they end up using it to make the bar.
Right.
They have about 10 beers on tap. And Number 17 was a huge hit. Became their top selling draft last summer.
Wow.
Just on tap or in bottle?
Well, hang on. So just on.
I do that a lot.
Just on tap for last summer, and like I said, became a huge hit. And just in the last few weeks, we just got the design finished. Is in the final stages now for tall cans. So
wow,
Big Rig looked at it and said that the volume makes sense for us to can the beer, and. That's in the process now. So they're hoping to have the tall cans of Number 17, a little bit of Rideau View in every beer is going to be good to go. They usually open the clubhouse for Masters weekend. They have a Masters viewing party.
Hello,
so
friends.
They're hoping that they're going to have the cans ready for that weekend. So that's, you know, as a guy who loves golf and beer, like what a wonderful collision.
A wedding of all the things that...
To be in a little...
It'll be an experience like no other.
To have at least a little bit of a role and then being able to write about the whole thing for the Rideau View website. So that's been kind of cool. And I'm looking forward to that Masters weekend and having my first can of Number 17.
Well, we are also looking forward to a can of Number 17, Chris.
Well, we'll see if we can make a couple appear
this
here
is
for
exactly
a tall can audio. Yeah.
That'd
what
be
a pro.
Awesome.
What a pro.
Look at this guy. And tee us up, you know, we made reference to it earlier on, the book, for people who haven't had a chance to check it out yet.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be just a wonderful Valentine's Day gift to give that
the
Ottawa
lover
Senators
in your life.
Fan in your life?
Absolutely.
The 100 Things Senators Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, published by Triumph Books. You can get it at Amazon.com, but support your local bookstore.
Yeah.
You can get it at Chapters and Indigo. And nothing finalized yet, but watch the Twitter feed. I might do one or two book signings in the lead up to Valentine's Day.
When those dates drop, we will make sure to share them as well.
Thanks,
at Tall Can Audio.
That.
Yeah, on Twitter and Instagram, facebook.com/TallCanAudio. This has been awesome. You gave us a ton of your time. Really
great,
appreciate it.
Great to have
you
in studio, man.
This has been, we're both big fans, and this was a thrill to be able to spend a little time
thanks,
talking
I really
sports.
Appreciate
and,
that. Thank you.
So that's Tall Can Sports for another week. We'll catch you all on the next one.
See ya.
Listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.